This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
I'm gonna marry the night. I won't give up on my life. I'm a warrior queen, live passionately.
And you're listening to Broad on Joy 94.9. Hi, this is Scarlett, and you're listening to Broad on Joy 94.9.
These are the weird women making weird stuff.
Sonia here for Broad on Joy 94.9, and we're speaking on the phone line to an amazing and wonderful and inspiring woman who has put together something that was way overdue, but it's happened and coming up. It is the Stranger With My Face International Film Festival in Tasmania. I'm speaking to Bryony Kidd. Welcome to Broad.
Hi, Sonia. It's very exciting to be speaking to you in this new context. It's great.
It's kind of funny, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
So tell us a bit, so briefly, for all our Broad listeners, listener sisterhood, well, who are you and what is Stranger With My Face?
Yeah, so Stranger With My Face International Film Festival, we started it in 2012 and it was Stranger With My Face Horror Film Festival at that point. And it basically started as a response to Women in Horror Month, really, because I had made some films and my colleague Rebecca Thompson had made some films, and we'd found that for short films particularly, the audience in Australia is a bit elusive, but we'd done quite well in the sort of genre market internationally. And through that, I'd kind of got to know the women in horror movement and found that to be a really supportive community where, you know, people were sort of actively looking for new genre films by women, particularly Heidi Honeycutt, who... Shannon Mark, who ran the Vista Film Festival at that point, which was about horror films by women. And that festival doesn't exist anymore, but she now runs the Theory of Film Night. But it was all sort of inspiring to me, and I just kind of thought, well, why don't we just do a little screening down here in Hobart to celebrate Women in Horror Month? So it was initially just going to be that, and we put together a short films program and screen a couple of features. We might as well, since we're hiring, you know, cinema. It just kind of got bigger and bigger. So that was the first year, and then, you know, it just became established as a festival and kept going from there. And then we had a break from it in 2015, just because I'm a filmmaker as well, so I kind of wanted to step back and just work out how it could be a sustainable sort of model, because I think anyone in the arts understands that, you know, you can do something a few times without much money or support, but if you're going to keep doing it on an ongoing basis, it really has to be structured in a way that makes sense. So that's why we kind of had a bit of a break from it. And now it's back in 2016 as Stranger With My Face International Film Festival. That's really because I can just see that there's a need for this kind of festival in Australia, because we have a sort of an undeveloped genre scene, but there's also not very many opportunities for women who are making this kind of work, and the audiences don't know as much about it as they should. So it just kind of seemed like something that was, you know, the time was ready to do that. And, yeah, so that's why it's sort of not only back this year, but also bigger, more international, more kind of serious in a way, I guess.
Looking forward to it. I'm sure a lot of Melburnians who might be listening will be interested in jumping on the ferry and heading down there, for sure.
Yeah, they really should, because it's a great weekend. I mean, we've sort of we sort of program it so that it really is pretty much all over a weekend. So you can come on Friday, and you could just come on Friday night and go Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and then possibly go back on Sunday night even. So that's kind of the way we've done it. Like, there are additional events throughout the week for local people, but for interstate people, you could come down, just have a whole lot of experiences in a, yeah, quite a short space of time, films and panel discussions, and meet filmmakers and meet interesting artists. And the great thing about having it in Hobart and in the Salamanca Arts Centre and those kind of venues that we use is that it's very sort of intimate community kind of vibe, I guess. So the kind of festival where you're not going to be lining up to get people's autographs, you're going to be just talking to them and hanging out with them and making friends with them. And I think that's why it's really important for the filmmakers particularly, because that's what you really need, is to be with people who are on your wavelength and can support each other and inspire each other and new relationships form and all that kind of stuff. So that's really the most important thing about the festival, I think, is just encouraging that kind of community building.
It's just brilliant. And you've had those, I mean, in January you had the Tasploitation Challenge. How did that go?
Yeah, it was great. It was really big this year. So that's something. The Tasploitation Challenge is a 48-hour filmmaking competition, and it was part of the festival in previous years, but we decided to separate it out because it's sort of become a big thing in its own right. And so basically you have 48 hours to, you know, write, direct and make a short horror film, and we screened them all. So they shot them over the weekend and we screened them all on the Monday night. And it's a very interesting competition to observe over time and to see what, you know, how people are developing, who have done it, you know, a couple of times now, and then new people that you've never heard of, suddenly they're making these really crazy, bizarre, interesting films. So it's quite, you know, there's like fathers who make films with their kids, and there's had a couple of family teams this year. So, you know, they're all in the botanical gardens together making film about the kids murdering people. We have sort of professional filmmakers, and then we have people who are just figuring out how to use their editing software, like on the morning of the shoot. the other interesting thing about it is that it has come from the Stranger With My Face Festival, which is really a feminist genre festival. And so it's all about the representation of women and increasing their opportunities and visibility. So I was continuing with Tasploitation Challenge this year, and, you know, Kayla Janice, who was helping me run it, we sort of wanted to carry on the ethos of the Stranger With My Face Festival into that. So basically we had some rules around, there's always got to be more than 50% women judges, for example. And we had a prize, a specific prize for the most interesting representation of gender in a film, which we call the Barbara Creed Award. And so, you know, these are just little things, but ways that we were trying to ensure that it would be an inclusive event and that women would participate, and that it wouldn't be like the rest of the, you know, how horror and the genre scene can be very, very male dominated. So, you know, whether or not that was entirely successful, I can go into in more detail, but that is the kind of ethos of it. So I guess everything I'm doing in this area with organising events and festivals tends to have a bit of that feminist perspective going on as well.
Oh, excellent. Look, really excited by it. And what year are you up to now? It's how many years?
It'll be Tasploitation Challenge was the third year. So it was quite a bit bigger. We had it at City Hall, and there was 27 films that were screened on the night, sort of up to 6 minutes duration. And we had a couple of interstate people as part of it, but I mean, I think ultimately I'd like to see teams come down to Tasmania for the weekend to be part of it, because I think it's a really good opportunity for them. It also sort of doesn't matter in a way if that doesn't happen, because it's just such a great sort of celebration of the spirit of the Tasmanian film community that we have down here. So that's sort of what became clear to me this year. It's just pretty much everyone was involved in one way or another. And, you know, most people around town probably know someone who was making a film that weekend. So it was just a really nice sort of collective feeling of everyone coming together.
Community
to do something
type
creative.
Of feeling. Yeah, community type of thing. Yeah. Yeah. Well, you'll get someone to make a film about the filmmaking.
That'd be really possible, because, I mean, it was a strange weekend. There was bushfires happening. There was actually a really awful accident in the city in that week that I suppose people were kind of thinking about but didn't want to at all reference when they're going off to make a fun horror film. But, you know, there was a weird vibe, I guess. And some of the films were werewolf films, and they had this, like, yellow moon in it with, like, smoke haze. And the smoke haze is actually the real smoke haze.
Yeah, I remember. Right, wow.
Yeah, so it's just an interesting feeling.
What's with werewolves at the moment?
Yeah.
Werewolf is really having a comeback or something. But, of course, for women, the werewolf historically means something quite sinister and different. You know the story of the origins of werewolf a little bit?
I don't know if I know the story. I've heard some. And Jasmina Chaninas gave a really amazing presentation at our festival a couple of years ago about her work, like the Girly Werewolf Hall of Fame, which you probably know about. And that just talks about different representations of werewolves in culture and women as wolves, I guess. So I kind of have some idea about it. But, I'm not an expert by any means.
No, well, it does have a darker side to it, that the werewolf was explained to girls and women as the creature that what men would become, or basically rapists. So and that's what the werewolf was. See, not all men are bad, you know, but some become rapists. So,
right.
I think it was in Germany or Bavaria or something. There were these serial rapes happening in villages, and so they designed this story to tell about werewolves and to be careful and all of the stuff. So there is a darker, not so pleasant side to it.
I do remember seeing a documentary about that, actually, where it was a real serial killer, and they thought that it was a werewolf, or they chose to pretend that that's what was happening, but it's really just a serial killer.
It was a horrible man. That's right.
But what immediately came to my mind was the female werewolf character, just because, I guess, Jasmina Chaninas' work, but also one of the films in the Tazploitation Challenge this year, that's what they did, is they actually told the story of a female werewolf where she, I think she's actually supposed to be Princess Mary, a Tasmanian icon, I guess, because she's our princess.
Yes.
And, you know, grew up in Hobart and then, you know, married royalty and went off and became a princess and stuff. But, you know, it's an interesting Tasmanian thing because she comes back here every now and again and hangs out with her family and her sister and, you know, just goes and has coffee around town, as you would. But she's royalty, so there's, like, people watching her and all this kind of stuff. So they use that character, and then I think in the story her child is kidnapped, and the sort of maternal rage starts to gradually turn her into a werewolf until she goes on this big murderous rampage.
Does she know about this? I'm wondering.
Princess Mary.
Yeah.
I wouldn't think so, no.
Has anyone tagged her in this?
I mean it's a very low budget film. It's
pretty interesting though.
Not very high, but the story was really cool, I thought, and a local actress that I know well, Sarah Pennsylvania, was playing the lead role, and you know, the prosthetic makeup wasn't great and stuff, but she just really went for it and made it into a cool character, which is just going around like howling and like clawing people's throats out, and I thought it was really fun and a really great idea, and you know, the sort of thing that both of our festivals are kind of about, which is you know, people using genre to express something interesting that sort of connects to real life, I guess.
April, with so many things happening, there's Supernova as well, we've got that happening, but of course what's happening in Tasmania is pretty amazing.
I hope people will book their festival pass and come down and just hang out, because that's really what it's about. And even if you're not a filmmaker, you can just meet people who share your interests and see some really unusual films that you may not have caught up with. And we're particularly sort of focusing on the presentation this year to kind of lift up the presentation standard. And, you know, we're not a world-class festival yet, because the facilities that we have here are sort of limited, but we're doing as much as we can with that. And
You are one of the longest running now, I believe. Festivals of your kind.
In terms of women's genre festivals, would think we probably are the longest running.
You may be the only one, actually, that's consistent.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, if Heidi Honeycutt hadn't started a different festival, hers would be the longest running.
Yeah, and that's Axe Wound. Is it Axe Wound at her? Or
I think Axe Wound is only pretty new as
a festival. Short, and that's short films, so, yeah.
They might have some features. But, yeah, that's only been going like a year or so. I mean, I suppose that's another reason why I wanted to keep the festival going, because it's just kind of like there really needs to be more festivals like this, particularly in, you know, horror genre. Not that we're strictly horror, because we just sort of focus on dark stories, dark fantasies, thriller, all that kind of stuff. But I think it's just such a male-dominated genre, and when you look at... the films that get press and all the stuff coming out all the time, it's just consistently male directors. And so there needs to be a way to highlight, actually, yes, there are women making films in this area. It is really interesting and you should be seeking it out, and we're making it easy for you to seek it out.
Exactly.
Yeah. But, I mean, I get kind of frustrated because I think people say to me, oh, you know, you're looking hard to find these great films directed by women that you can screen in your festival. Maybe there aren't any. Maybe you shouldn't have a festival because it's hard for you to find them. And I just get kind of angry at that, because it's like, no, they're there. They're always there. Whenever I look for them, they're there. It's just that because they tend to be not in the mainstream of horror, in the sense of they're not doing the same thing as everything else, or possibly the budgets are a bit lower, or whatever, they don't get written about in these roundups of, you know, the top horror films we're looking forward to in 2016 or whatever, because they don't get considered to be that the right kind of film for that. And I think that's to do with economics, just because women are not accessing the same budget levels. But it's also just to do with a kind of cultural snobbery, I suppose, that makes it so that sort of men define what a particular genre is. So this isn't the mainstream of horror. You know, this is where, you know, Wes Craven and John Carpenter and Toby Hooper and all these people are hanging out. And then over on the side, you have, these are the weird women making weird stuff that's, you know, separate to that. And I think, you know, women are never going to get more opportunity until those kind of preconceptions are really challenged.
Yeah, until they end, actually.
Yeah, because, I mean, I love all of those male directors I just mentioned. I mean, but when you think about something like Texas Chainsaw Massacre, that's a bizarre piece of cinema. Like, it's out there, it's experimental, it's edgy, it's eccentric. And the fact that that is so easily considered to be, like, in the centre of the canon is bizarre when you consider that there's all these other films that wouldn't come anywhere near that. So it's kind of... you know, why is there this acceptance of experimentation in men? But when women do it, it's considered to be not part of the genre, or it's not really horror, or whatever.
I guess the closest it comes is possibly more recent times with The Babadook. I mean, The Babadook, if you think about it, The Babadook has right there its weirdness, and it's very bizarre. This creature exists or doesn't exist, but it did have the pop-up book, which they did a limited edition. Yeah. And I'm sure that there would be masks, there could be cosplay for the Babadook, just as there is for Leatherface in the Texas Chainsaw. But somehow that's more acceptable than, say, someone dressing up as the Babadook at this point in time. But seriously, the Babadook didn't get enough attention within Australia, but it certainly got quite a bit of attention overseas.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a really interesting example, because, I mean, you could talk to Jennifer Kent and it would be really interesting what she would say about whether she wants to be a genre director or not. And, I get the feeling she probably doesn't want to be sort of identified in that way. But she knows so much about the genre that she might be making what to her is perhaps more an art house experimental film. Well, not experimental, but, you know, drama, art house. But she knows enough about the tropes of that genre to make sure that it is very squarely within that as well. And it's kind of undeniable. So even though people can say, oh, that's weird, it made me feel funny or whatever. You can't.
But on the other hand, but we also see it with something like The Conjuring and what's his other one he's done? He's a great film director. Sean Tan.
Yeah.
Oh, not Sean Tan.
James Wan.
That's it. Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's already, you know, The Conjuring 2 is due out soon. We don't ever hear, I don't know if it's been even offered to Jennifer Kent, but The Babadook 2. I know that sounds weird, but that's never been, that doesn't ever come up with women directors.
Well, it doesn't, because it tends to be like they have a success like that and
it's one off.
It's sort of one off.
Goodbye and do something serious now.
The complication is that I'm pretty sure she wouldn't want to do The Babadook 2.
Yeah. So wow, you know, but it could happen, though, couldn't it?
Has she been offered Conjuring 3? I don't know. Like, you know, like she should be being offered some of those big projects.
Exactly. Yeah.
It is, but it's kind of like, because you're making stuff that's a bit more unique, then you somehow are sort of pushed outside of the power structure.
Yeah,
as well.
We can't find something for you, so we're not going to even try to build something for you.
Yeah,
or let you build it, you know, like have the confidence and faith that a woman can actually build her own, place to make
exactly,
a film.
That's exactly it, I think. That's a really good point, because, like, not very many of the world's most interesting female directors want to actually do those big superhero films.
Yep.
Not only because it's the kind of poison to tell us and, you know, interference and you can't really do what you want and there's so much pressure, but just because they actually have their own imaginations and their own story world that they're more interested in.
Mm.
So it's not appealing to them creatively.
Yeah.
So, that's exactly what should be happening, is people should be looking out for, like, who is the new sort of female Guillermo del Toro. And, you know, I could name a few people straight away who would fit into that bracket. And give them the money to do something. Like, not, you know, you might not give them as much as him straight off the bat, but give them a big chunk of money and let them do what they want to do. And you'll have...
And trust that they can do it, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
As long as they have... I guess if they have an accountant they approve of, what's stopping them, you know? If there's an approved of... That both parties can approve a certain person who's the accountant, and then the rest can be sorted, you know? Like, just leave us to it. I mean, that's what I think is possibly the only way. And hopefully this new gender fairness, this gender equality at Screen Australia, hopefully they will come up with, you know, ideas.
Yeah. I mean, I hope so. I mean, I think it's very difficult in Australian film, or any film in general in the world right now, because the budgets are just shrinking.
Mm.
There's very little opportunity in mid-range or low to mid-range filmmaking in general. So, you know, it's all very well to say.
I mean, look at Star Wars, for example, The Force Awakens. Huge.
Yeah.
They've made $2 billion now. They've surpassed the Titanic.
Oh, God.
But the thing is, if you look at the cast, a lot of the cast in there, they're all from independent film. They're all from the independent film industry.
Yeah. So you need the independent film to practice their craft and make something interesting.
But the directors aren't. The directors aren't from the independent background.
Ah, right. Okay,
not for the Star Wars ones, except for one.
No.
And like, none.
Well, I mean, I guess
there's no women.
Most people are from independent. If you go far enough back, then most of them are. But it's just how they've actually chosen their career trajectory and whether they're interested in making, you know, taking creative risks. Because you get these people directing Star Wars or whatever, and you just get the feeling like, you know, he knows that that's not the place for him to take creative risks. He's just going to deliver a solid effort. And, you know, that's fair enough, I guess. But to me, it would be a more interesting film if you were taking bigger risks.
Exactly.
It's just a sort of a sad thing that's how mainstream filmmaking has evolved, where it's considered normal and just legitimate to really just execute mediocrity. I mean, because it didn't used to be like that. It wasn't like that in the 70s. Like, people were making films that were actually really edgy and interesting, and they were mainstream films. So, I don't know. Something's gone wrong.
Oh, I don't know. Money has got in the way.
Yeah.
And who makes the most, and who makes it, yeah.
Yeah, but, I mean, what would be great, and maybe it is happening, is if the sort of micro to low-budget features started to have a resurgence and had developed a business model that's actually sustainable. And I think that's kind of happening in horror, particularly in America, where there's all these indie films that, you know, the Blumhouse and that kind of stuff, where they're making stuff for under $1 million that means that they can actually make a bit of a profit and they can keep making films. So if we in Australia could work out some system where, you know, we put our low-budget features on VOD and people actually paid for them, you know, there's a huge potential there. But, you know, I don't know. It's sort of at a tipping point at the moment.
Ozflix, did you get my... I posted it, I think, to you, did I? The thing about Ozflix?
Oh, Ozflix, yeah. No, I have been reading a bit about that, but I'm not totally up with exactly what they're doing. But
yeah, but they're having a planning meeting, but I don't know if you can make it, but anyway.
Yeah, right, okay. Yeah.
March the 23rd.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind hearing about that, actually.
Yeah, I might try and go, and maybe I can... record it, I don't know. See if they'll let me.
You could at least report on it and cover some key points or something.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to find out what's they're planning to do, if anything, for locating for female filmmaking or films. I don't know if they're going to... I don't know how many films they've got so far. I think they've got about 300 so far that they can have.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, so it will be interesting.
Okay, well, there's still a lot of Australian... stuff that's undiscovered, I think.
Stuff that has remained like that, and also a lot of the short. I don't know if there's a short film part that they'll have embedded, but it would be good if they had a short film.
You talked to people about Gender Matters? Because I feel like I didn't really say anything interesting.
I did for Sophie, because she's on the. She was on the task force, or she's part of that. So she's having to, just pull things apart and going over stuff. It's quite a long process, and there's still, it's still going to be going ongoing. It could take a while because there's a lot to consider, I guess, to go through. But they're going to try all these different ways to try to change things, I think, advance stuff. So, she's involved with that. They're looking at a suite of different programs to do and put together. Don't know where she's up to, but it's a start.
Well, I'm going to be applying for the first two of them. So.
Oh, good. Good on you.
Like, I think that there is a question mark of whether it's actually the right thing, but I guess there's no harm in giving it a shot. But it would be a pity if that's all that happens. They do sort of one big chunk of funding and then they go, oh, we've done all we can now. And then everything just goes back to normal. I think that would be really sad.
Yeah. So, they might need to clarify that a bit more. And actually...
It's like the whole culture needs to be changed, not just
give
a few people an opportunity. Cause you have to... That just helps those few people.
And, and it's like building the confidence in the audience too, to say that it's very good to go and see a film and not think about the gender of the person. Because at the moment they still say, well, people don't go and see films made by women, and then they have The Dressmaker, which was a resounding success. Whether you liked it or not, it was a resounding – it was a successful enterprise, and that's very female-centric. So it's clearly they're not – clearly they don't know how to promote the message out there to an audience, and I think that's will be the turning point will be when the audience start – spending the money, which it looks like they're doing.
I don't think the audience really needs to change. The only thing that needs to change is that women need to be given the budgets
to change
films.
Yeah, so they're more seen. Visible.
Yeah, I mean that thing with The Dressmaker, like that was great that that worked out, but she was given a much smaller budget than she should have been. as in she was considered lucky to get that budget, but she's actually a very experienced director. And
exactly.
You know, like, I don't
ridiculous.
Know.
Ridiculous.
Anyway.
Well, there we go. Stranger with My Face International Film Festival is on this month. You have to visit it. You have to go and get involved and enjoy some blood and guts and thrills and spills and, I don't know, just good films and good filmmaking, and meet the filmmakers too. Yes,
and
nice.
Please come and introduce yourself to me or the festival staff, and then we will introduce you to other people, because that's kind of what it's all about.
Yeah, it's a great opportunity.
And then going away, it's talking to people and hanging out. So, yeah, do that.
Cool. Thank you, Bryony. Now, before you go, I've got some questions for you, and this is what everybody gets for Broad. When you're on Broad, these are the questions that you have to endure.
Oh, no. It's scary.
Okay. So what does feminism mean to you?
Oh, okay. It means that you believe in equality between men and women, and you do something to promote that in some way, so you don't just ignore you know, oppression and things when you see it. You actually try to encourage equality.
Cool, very good. Are you a feminist?
I would absolutely say that I'm a feminist.
Sorry,
yes.
It is just very generic. I can't stop laughing. Sorry. I'll say that again. Do you mind? Sorry. Are you a feminist?
I am a feminist, yes.
Great. Why feminism? And why do you think it's important?
It's just important because gender roles and identity kind of pervades every aspect of our lives from the time we're babies. Mm. And it's probably stupid that it does, but that's the world we're in. And so it means that, you know, as women and men, we're kind of constrained by certain stereotypes and power structures that really can only harm us and hold us back. So I think it's important to deconstruct a lot of that and find out, you know, why things are the way they are, question things, because otherwise you end up with a world where, you know, young girls feel like they can't achieve what they want to do and yes. can't aspire to certain things, and men feel very sort of shut down and isolated, and neither of those things are at all good for anyone's happiness. So that's why it's really important to pursue feminism.
Mm. And what do you think is the most important issue facing women in Australia now?
Oh, that's a big one. I mean, you can't really go past the issue of violence against women, because mm-hmm. you can see, you know, that is, you know, literally robbing people of their lives and children of their mothers and all that kind of stuff. So on a fundamental level, I think that's a real problem for this society. But as a lot of people have pointed out, it's only part of a sort of spectrum of, I guess, the kind of way that we view women and treat women in this society. So it's at the extreme end. But, you know, talking to someone disrespectfully in a work context is part of that spectrum as well. So it's from an idea that some people have that women are somehow to be controlled rather than to be sort of free agents. So, you know, that can result in a huge array of different kinds of problems. And I guess you have to look at it at both ends of the spectrum to sort of combat that.
Yes, absolutely. And finally, someone from the past or a group of women from the past or, you know, who've inspired you?
Group of women from the past.
Or it could be one. Well, it could be just one woman.
Since you say group of women, I had to think of the Brontes. Because
the Brontes, yeah.
I have two sisters and we're all arty. Like, my two sisters are artists and writers, and so people often called us the Brontes.
And no tuberculosis, though, I hope? No.
I think we're a bit happier than them and a bit healthier and stuff like that, and probably not quite as charmingly charismatic. But, yeah, I mean, they're just always interesting to me because of their creativity that's just so much a part of their identity and who they were and how they lived their lives. And it's just the, you know, them all living together and kind of just sort of taking it for granted that that's what you do. You express yourself, you write, you paint, you draw, you have something to say and you follow through with it. It's just a really beautiful kind of thing to think about, even though it didn't necessarily work out great for all of them.
Yes, it didn't work out great for any of them, really, while they were living. While they were living.
Not really. No, but the different attitudes that they had, you know, like between Emily and Charlotte,
yes.
and, you know, their different interpretations, because they grew up in the same family in exactly the same conditions. But
and there was one boy, wasn't there? The brother, what was it?
Yeah, Bramwell as well. Yeah, but you know, they had a different perspective on women and life and feminism just within that one group of a family. So I think that's really fascinating as well, how that kind of diverged but also came together.
Have you seen the French film, The Bronte Sisters?
No, I don't think I have.
With Isabelle Huppert and Isabella Gianni, and I think there's the only Isabelle in it. Two Isabelles.
I'd like to see that. Yeah.
It's done so well. The French do it so well because it's so fraught with misery and depression.
Yeah, I think we some other film cultures shy away from turmoil and depressing issues, but sometimes you just have to go there and have a go at that.
Mm. Well, that's awesome. Thank you so much for speaking to us on Broad, Bryony Kid.
Thank you, Sonia.
Stranger with My Face, International Film Festival in Tasmania.
International
now, and it runs. It's running this month. It's from the 14th to the 17th of April. Yay.
Yeah, and I just have to say that I probably should have mentioned Mary Shelley as well, because we have our Mary Shelley Symposium as part of the festival, so she really should have been the first person that I thought of. But anyway,
well, Maria did. Maria Lewis, who I mentioned before.
Oh, right.
Mary Shelley was hers, and you know she's just written a female werewolf book.
Ooh,
I'm trying to get her to come down, actually. She'd be great to come along.
Yeah, she really should.
She's very outspoken.
Yeah, that sounds good. We need outspoken people to come down.
She's gorgeous. Excellent.
I'm Bryony Kidd, and you're listening to Broad on Joy 94.9.
Perfect. All right, cool. That's it. All right. I'll let you go. Thanks a lot. That was great.
I absolutely consider myself a feminist, and of course I think it's important for men and women to have equality, and that's to me what the definition of a feminist is. And I feel like it's important for myself as an artist to kind of put blinders on to the obstacles in front of me and just move forward. I think if you just focus on all the obstacles, it's easy to get slower in pursuing your goals. I absolutely, absolutely consider myself a feminist and, you know, do everything I can to make things better for the next generation.
I am Sophie Hyde, and you're listening to Broad on Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.